This is the More Than Right podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lopez. Restraint is a word one hears a lot where Israel is concerned. That's because the Jewish state is on the verge of finishing off an intractable enemy. Since the unrestrained surprise attack on Israel by terrorist organization Hamas last October 7th, the world has rallied to the cause of Hamas and the Palestinians, demanding the Jewish state enact a ceasefire. Israel has, understandably, refused. Then leaders of Iran's Quds Force were killed in an Israeli airstrike on their Syrian headquarters in Damascus. Iran promised revenge. And so, the Islamic terror state launched more than 300 unmanned drones and a complement of cruise missiles at Israel, most of which were intercepted and destroyed by Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system. The United States claims it shot down 75 Iranian missiles from U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria. Both Saudi Arabia and Jordan aided in the shootdowns. As far as Iranian actions are concerned, the attack could be considered a measured response in that the drones and missiles took roughly 9 hours to reach their intended targets, giving Israel plenty of time to plan a defense. The Iranian airstrike, therefore, looks a lot like a pointless, face-saving measure against a U.S. partner that just happens to have a nuclear stockpile, which some estimates place as high as 400 warheads. Foreign policy experts tell the press they fear Iran's failed attack signals the beginning of a wider regional conflict. I doubt it. Israel's refusal to accept calls for a ceasefire, especially from President Biden and the U.S. State Department, signals Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's determination to obliterate Hamas. The Iranian missile attack is the final nail in the coffin for Presidents Barack Obama and Joe Biden's morally bankrupt appeasement of Iran's ruling mullahs. It's impossible to pretend relations with Iran can ever be normalized while its terrorist ally, Hamas, kills Americans and holds them hostage. It seems unfreezing billions of dollars in Iranian assets at the end of Obama's second term has funded a lot of weapons development for the world's largest exporter of terrorism. Let's hope Israel's response to Iran's attack is to bomb its oil fields and nuclear enrichment facilities. The same nation who rushed the U.S. Embassy in Tehran in 1979 and held 66 American hostages for 444 days is the same nation that supports Hamas among other terrorist organizations in the Middle East. The same Hamas who last October 7th killed 29 Americans in Israel and continues to hold 16 as hostages. The same Hamas that inspires thousands to march in U.S. cities and university campuses to chant, "From the River to the Sea," which is shorthand for the extermination of the Jews and their state. Postscript. As predicted, Israel did strike Iran's oil and nuclear facilities using unmanned drones and missiles. According to the New York Times, quote, Iranian officials said that no enemy aircraft had been detected in Iranian airspace and that the main attack on the military base in central Iran had been initiated by small, unmanned drones that were likely launched from inside Iranian territory, unquote. Israeli intelligence clearly has an operational presence in Iran. Between 2010 and 2012, 5 scientists tied to Iran's nuclear program were either killed by explosive devices or by mysterious gunmen. Mossad, Israel's intelligence service, is the chief suspect. At the time, CBS News reported Washington sent Israel, quote, strong signals from the Obama administration that the U.S. did not want Israel to continue the assassinations, unquote. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told the Obama administration he would end Israel's targeted elimination of Iran's nuclear scientists. Israel's recent attack on Iranian soil, however, may signal she will redouble her efforts to disrupt Iran's nuclear program. but it also brings a fitting end to the malicious Obama-Biden administration's project of enriching and normalizing one of the globe's great existential evils, Iran. When investigative reporter Catherine Herridge was fired by CBS News, the network locked her out of its building and seized her notebooks, some containing the names and personal information of her confidential sources. But the seizure didn't raise many eyebrows among so-called journalists. That's likely due to Herridge's long association with Fox News and her relentless coverage of Hunter Biden selling foreign entities access to his politician father, the big guy, Joe Biden. Here's the question no one seems willing to ask. Why did CBS take Herridge's list of sources, and who did they give them to? One would have to be utterly cut off from reality not to recognize the cozy relationship between the mainstream media, Democrats, and elements within the permanent administrative deep state, the minions at the CIA, FBI, and U.S. Justice Department. Remember, CNN was conveniently in attendance, with news helicopters hovering above no less, when armed FBI agents raided former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago, Palm Beach, Florida estate. Clearly, CNN was part of the operation, as it and other news networks were for the FBI's Trump-Russia collusion smear campaign. Recently, an op-ed appearing in the journal The Free Press by National Public Radio business editor Yuri Berliner stirred up controversy within the media. According to Berliner, Trump's election in 2016 stirred the left-leaning media to abandon what little objectivity existed among their ranks and become a deranged anti-Trump juggernaut. Quote, as in many newsrooms, his, Trump's election in 2016 was greeted at NPR with a mixture of disbelief, anger, and despair. Just one note, I eagerly voted against Trump twice, but felt we were obliged to cover him fairly. But what began as tough, straightforward coverage of a belligerent, truth-impaired president veered toward efforts to damage or topple Trump's presidency. Persistent rumors that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia over the election became the catnip that drove reporting. At NPR, we hitched our wagon to Trump's most visible antagonist, Representative Adam Schiff, unquote. Now we know Representative Schiff, the media's favorite Capitol Hill anti-Trump Democrat, lied when he said evidence existed which proved Trump was an intelligence asset of Vladimir Putin's Russia. Both the New York Times and Washington Post won Pulitzer Prizes for their coverage of a story that was nothing more than a U.S. intelligence disinformation operation against a sitting president. The basis of this intelligence operation was the now discredited anti-Trump dossier concocted by British spy and FBI paid informant Christopher Steele. The U.S. security state reared its ugly head again in the 2020 presidential election when 51 former members of the U.S. intelligence community signed an open letter claiming Hunter Biden's laptop revelations were a Russian intelligence operation. The press dutifully reported the claim as though it was true. The claim, like the charge Trump was a Russian asset, was a lie. 1 year later, CBS correspondent Catherine Herridge reported, quote, data from the laptop that the lawyer for a Delaware computer repair shop owner says was left by Hunter Biden in 2019, and which the shop owner later provided to the FBI under subpoena, shows no evidence of tampering or fabrication, according to an independent review commissioned by CBS News, unquote. As far as I know, Herridge was the first mainstream reporter who bothered to verify the Hunter Biden laptop's contents, proving the press was a willing participant in another U.S. intelligence disinformation operation, this time, to interfere in the presidential election of 2020. This may explain why CBS fired Herridge and seized her list of sources. There is, after all, another presidential election coming in November. Last September, a federal judge demanded Herridge reveal her sources for a story she reported for Fox News in 2017. The story centered on an FBI investigation into scientist Yanping Chen, a naturalized U.S. citizen suspected of spying for the People's Republic of China. Chen was never charged and later filed suit against the FBI for violating her privacy by leaking news of her criminal investigation to Catherine Herridge. A federal judge has fined Herridge $800 a day until she gives up her sources, but it's likely CBS has already surrendered Herridge's information to their friends at the FBI. Deep state agencies don't want their people leaking to Fox News. Fox isn't on the approved list of deep state-friendly media outlets, like the New York Times or Washington Post. They especially don't want the public to find out how inept they are at catching Chinese intelligence agents stealing American secrets, or how good they are at covering up for favored Democratic politicians and their corrupt, drug-addled, influence-peddling sons. Catherine Herridge says the court's demand that she give up her sources threatens press freedom. She hasn't realized that the press is not free, but an appendage of our intelligence state. Just recently, GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson, a former critic of the Patriot Act's warrantless searches, suddenly changed his mind and successfully convinced 19 of his Republican colleagues to reauthorize this government violation of our Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable searches and seizures. But Catherine Herridge's former network, CBS, was more concerned by the opponents of authoritarian government power. Quote, "Among the detractors were some of Johnson's harshest critics, members of the ultra-conservative House Freedom Caucus, who have railed against the Speaker the last few months for reaching across the aisle to carry out the basic functions of government." Unquote. If we are to believe CBS, violating America's constitutional freedoms is a basic function of government. That proclaims the sorry state of today's press, an untrustworthy mouthpiece of corrupt authoritarian government. The media, which was once a champion of free speech, has become a chief proponent of censorship, which they call content moderation. So, who does the moderating? Well, the government, that's who. The problem with that is the Constitution strictly prohibits government from doing so in the most unambiguous way. It's called the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or the press, etc., etc. But a YouGov poll finds 80% of Democrats and 60% of Republicans think social media companies should censor hate speech. The pollsters did not ask respondents to define what they meant by hate speech, or who should have the power to police the so-called hate. It doesn't dawn on them that their concerns about speech, or its policing, are irrelevant. You see, the First Amendment phrase, "Congress shall make no law," clearly prohibits representatives of the political majority from moderating anyone's speech, no matter how hateful. Their feelings on the matter don't matter a damn. The Bill of Rights doesn't protect the majority. It protects free individuals against mindless busybodies, whether they be the public, elected civil servants, or the censorship shills of the press. None of their opinions matter, but protecting yours does, no matter who thinks it hateful. Investigative journalist Michael Schellenberger says there exists a U.S. government regime of censorship under what he calls the censorship industrial complex. It's comprised of U.S. government agencies, academia, and big tech social media companies. In his testimony before Congress, Schellenberger said this unholy alliance, quote, "combines established methods of psychological manipulation, some developed by the U.S. military during the global war on terror, with highly sophisticated tools from computer science, including artificial intelligence. The complex's leaders are driven by the fear that the internet and social media platforms empower populist, alternative, and fringe personalities and views which they regard as destabilizing. The federal government officials, agencies, and contractors have gone from fighting ISIS recruiters and Russian bots to censoring and deplatforming ordinary Americans and disfavored public figures, unquote. And this brings us back to Catherine Herridge. She says refusing to hand the names of her sources to a U.S. court signals her dedication to a free press. But is a press that champions the goals of the U.S. government's censorship industrial complex worth paying an $800 a day fine to defend? She'd do better joining Elon Musk's X, formerly Twitter, and start an independent free speech news platform, a la Fox News alum Tucker Carlson, that covers the rising populist movement and interviews insightful fringe personalities who challenge entities of the corrupt and ossified status quo, entities the mainstream media seeks to preserve by means of authoritarian censorship. That's a new reality poor Catherine Herridge fails to comprehend. That concludes this edition of the More Than Right podcast. If you feel so inclined, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, this is Steve Lopez.